Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, we talk to Bill Chandler from Melbourne, Australia, the founder and convener of Australian Urban Design Forum. The interview opens with Bill telling us about the evolution of walking professionals in Australia.
Well, I think the evolution of walking is interesting intellectually, because cities were designed for walking, and particularly for Australians, then where did you go to look at good cities? You invariably went to mostly European cities, which were not designed for the motor car at all. They predated by a long shot. There was, I suppose, a strong tradition of having ordered cities in Australia. At least the central city, and reasonably wide roads. So you had nothing of the tradition of cow tracks and whatever, you know, London and European and medieval cities. But the profession of walking, if you like, which has now evolved, and there's a whole level of professionalism about walking, some of which is useful, some of which is not, because it gets in the way of real change, simply wasn't there, and it wasn't really conceived, I think, in the early days, other than to say that places ought to be good for people. By and large, cars screw that up. I don't think it started by people saying, we've got to look after walking. I think it was more subtle than that. I can recall writing a paper called, More Walking, Less Talking, I think about 1997 or 98. And that for me was the first time that I really formalised the focus on walking. And I argue very strongly that you must start with walking. Designing roads is easy. Engineers hate me saying that, but it's true, and I happen to be an engineer as well. You get the micro right, the local right, and the rest will fall into place. You can't do it the reverse way around, and I think that that's been a long, and still is a long, hard struggle.
Australia is probably one of the most urbanised countries in the world, and the distances between cities are so huge that you can imagine that people who undertake those journeys, you know, they're in their cars, they're driving great long distances, spending long time in their cars. It's very difficult to actually get them out of their car when they get to the destination. I imagine they don't actually see walking as the most obvious way of getting around town. They probably are wedded to their cars, are they not?
Well, they are to a degree, but that is also, it's part of the mythology, and it's part of the mythology, it's a constant challenge to break down the mythology. Most people I know, at the start and end of every trip, walk. And I recall Colin Buchanan, Traffic in Towns, I don't know when it was, in the 70s, came to lecture in Melbourne. And he described the trip he did to get from his house in London, wherever it was, to the lecture theatre, and what he called the squiggle journeys. Now, primarily, he was a car-based traffic person, but he had a sense of pedestrians. I think, you know, way back, Traffic in Towns was, I think it was the late 60s or early 70s, the book, wasn't it? I can't remember. But the squiggle journeys was sort of, you know, I got out of bed here, I went to the front door, I got in a cab and went round this corner, and then all of a sudden, whee, I got in the plane and travelled 10,000 miles and here I am in Melbourne. And that constant need to do the macro and the micro. But if you don't do the micro first, that is, how do you walk? How is it possible to walk? Is it attractive to walk? Then you never get back to that. It's always, walking is too dangerous, it's too uncomfortable, it's too slow, it's too all negatives. We might as well go by car. And that's a constant challenge to overcome that. And the only way, and half the time, most of the time, perhaps I'm not successful, but is to keep saying to people, start with the walking experience, and then the rest, you'll figure it out, because we know the science of roads and all that sort of thing. That's not so hard.
Melbourne itself is often touted now as an example of a place that certainly downtown has been brilliantly designed to encourage more walking. But I imagine there's large areas of Australian cities which are not like the centre of Melbourne, and there's all sorts of things going on there
No question. It's interesting, the experience of different capital cities. Melbourne's main streets, there are little streets as well, but main streets, the central grid, are 30-metre streets. And Rob Adams, who from Melbourne City Council, has surreptitiously claimed a road space to make all of the pavements wider. So there is space for cafe chairs, there is space for trees. Sydney streets are, the grid is 20 metres, and is canyon-like and just not pleasant. To a degree, Brisbane is also, but that is a subtropical city, and so they've set back squares and shade and all that sort of thing. But that 30 metre road allowance, I think, has, it's not caused the focus on walking, but it's made it much, it's made it possible to create a better walking environment. So you can have fruit barrows which don't get in the way of the walkers. You can have motorbikes sometimes parked on the footpath, which in other circumstances would be just a pain in the neck. However, most activity centres, the next level down from the CBD, because what I'm talking about is Melbourne, the CBD, as distinct from Melbourne, the metropolitan area, are pretty poorly designed. And they're still at the stage, in most cases, of eating pedestrian space with car space, either stationary cars or moving cars. Now, there's strong moves to pull that back, and, well, Bendigo, as you mentioned, is one good example of that, of where they're having really a shared zone over a very large area of a regional city of 100,000 people. But there's still a long way to go for a lot of what are described as the activity centres.
What sort of role have you had yourself in working in Australia in the built environment?
I suppose over the last 20 years, the role has been one of influencing and focusing on the agenda of urban design, and therefore on walking. The specific of being the founder and convener of Urban Design Forum, and that has been a very good vehicle for simply giving people an opportunity to discuss issues, and a wide range of people. So I guess if I have any claim to fame, it's around that, as well as doing work as a consultant. I was chief planner at Urban Designer at Melbourne Docklands from the early 1990s, over a period of 6 years. But that also involved, for a couple of years, I was director of planning and urban design and director of marketing. Only got paid one salary, as my CEO said, you just got to work twice as hard, you don't get paid anymore. But that was the first time that I formally, or at least conceptually, understood the importance of marketing ideas, and realised that for probably most of my career, I had been a marketer of ideas rather than the world's greatest designer.
When you come away from Australia and you see what's going on elsewhere, are you seeing similar issues challenging professionals in different countries as they are in Australia, or do you find that Australia is very different from what you find elsewhere?
Generalising into countries doesn't work. One of, I did these study tours for a whole range of reasons, but one of, I usually try and get some sort of focus, but one driver this time is to be able to say to some of my Australian colleagues, and they won't necessarily like this, when they say, well, we're not perfect, but we're sort of pretty much ahead of the world, is to say very clearly, well, in some things, yes, but there are other places where people are way ahead of Australia. And it's not an arrogance where Australians say they're ahead of the world. Rather, I think it's probably a level of ignorance, and so therefore looking at how things are done. But you've got to be on the alert all the time, because engineers are still being trained as engineers, architects are still being trained as architects, and it's only the really keen and dedicated engineers and architects, and there are very good engineer designers, and you know, it's not as if architects have got it all. It's only the really committed ones who stay alert enough and not let their egos take over. To say, hey, we need engineers, or we need landscape designers, or we need artists, or whatever.
So what sort of areas, and perhaps because of your urban design hat on, suggest places which have been designed to promote walking?
There are two levels of that, I suppose. One is what I'd call functional walking, and the other is pleasure walking. A functional one, it's a life work. For 15 years, I've been trying to convince Connex, the train company in Melbourne, put a little pedestrian path across between a neighbourhood centre, which I helped set up, and the railway station, through a large car park. And I failed miserably for 15 years. Now that to me is functional rather than aesthetic. It's not a particularly beautiful railway station, certainly not a beautiful car park. But that functional ability to move around, and for all people, for older people, maybe not little kids by themselves, but to have that sense of being safe, and it's a cliche, but that it's owned by pedestrians rather than, oh, quick, we must jump out of the way of a motor car. Now, I think that functional dimension of design is very, very important. It's not just to do with trees and bricks and colours and all that sort of thing. The aesthetic one is, well, the fact that I keep travelling, I suppose, is I'm not sure I'm actually looking for the perfect walking space. but I can think of numerous ones, and some of them are not necessarily beautiful. Where we are right here, South Bank, London, it's not a particularly beautiful area, the South Bank of London. There's something about it which it's good to be there. Federation Square, the new major square space in Melbourne, I think is very good. Not everybody's cup of tea, and the actual architecture, I think, it has dated rather faster than I imagined. I wasn't responsible for the design of it. Sorry, I don't mean that in a benevolent sense, but I thought it would be more lasting than that. But that point aside, the space itself and the way people can move around there. And that's right at really the pedestrian centre of Melbourne.
And that was a completely new space, wasn't
Absolutely.
It? Absolutely. Built over railway lines.
Over railway lines. This crossroads, which is what it is in Melbourne, has a cathedral on one corner, a railway station, a major railway station on one corner, and a historic pub on the other corner, and Federation Square made the fourth corner. And that, to me, now is really the pedestrian heart of Melbourne.
We're heading towards what people are saying it will be a recession, especially, and it's certainly reflected in the property market. What are the sort of key pointers that you think should be being put across to the man in the street, the woman on the omnibus, or whatever, however you want to say it, to say, we want you to come and live in our towns and cities rather than living in the suburb?
I think in interacting layers about things, and therefore I think one of the early trips I did when I was involved in the State Urban Arts Unit in Victoria was to look at artists in cities. And one place I went to was Seattle, which had a very good name for involvement of artists. But I was brought up short by a fellow who's running that program and said, it's not really to do with art, Bill. It's to do with getting middle managers living in the city, and the two things they really want are good schools for their kids and a good environment, you know, including interesting art in the street and that sort of thing. So the aim there was not to improve streets or anything like that at all. The primary aim was to make it work as a business centre, and they had all sorts of federal government support, and it was renowned in the 80s as the place to, you know, where artists were involved in all sorts of major projects.
Our anxiety, is it not, is that all we're creating in our city centres are places for transient populations of people who don't have kids. Our cities are pretty child-friendless in this country. What would be the marketing tools we should use to try to entice people to come and live in our towns and cities? And I'm thinking that probably one of the things to play on is the fact that for me would be that you could walk to destinations of real value from where you live. And one of the issues I feel with the suburbs is that the majority of destinations you want to get to, which may be things like the playground or open space or whatever, are just not within walking distance, and people jump in their cars. And the thing that we could do with our cities is refurbish them in such a way that we actually create more child-friendly spaces. But that's my view. I would like just to hear what your view is.
I think child-friendly spaces are probably friendly spaces, period. And it's a little like DDA compliance stuff. It's not just for people in wheelchairs. I don't like tripping up steps, which I don't see because I'm chatting or something while I'm walking along. It's perhaps a good highest common denominator to design for children, knowing that downstream, then that's pretty good for, you know, everybody. Not that everybody wants to use a playground or something like that, but if kids feel comfortable.
Getting older myself, I'm very aware of the fact that we need to create spaces which are going to be pleasant for older people to be. There seems to be more and more desire for older people to go and live in a sort of ghetto older people community. Is that something that's prevalent in Australia? It's certainly something that's happening here, is that people are being sold retirement villages.
I'm strongly opposed to gated communities, but having said that, in Docklands, of course, I encouraged vertical gated communities that are called apartment buildings and old folks' places, which are not necessarily gated communities as such, but there is a degree of isolation. It's interesting, I get a lot of insights or get insights reinforced by people who've got nothing to do with design. And friend I've been staying with for a couple of days observed that, why is it that in activity centres there's no activity? Her conclusion was it was to do with the fact that you can't live in cities. You don't have residence in activity centres. I mean, obviously in central London people do live here, but lots of suburban activity centres don't have any residents at all within walking distance, because by the time you've got a car park and a large shopping centre, you're already well past the 400 metres and hey, you might have jumped the car. So therefore, the idea of the mixed use. It's not really the village, you know, we have this idea. For me, we're not back to villages, and you can describe London as 200 villages or whatever if you want, but it's not really the case. But to look at the underlying values which made village life so important, and to satisfy the values or encourage the values, but in forms which are going to be very different from a traditional village, simply because of the complexity of cities, particularly large cities. So it's, again, the emphasis on, I guess, the code word is localising as distinct from globalising. It will be a radical change in the context of the radical change which has occurred since the Second World War, and that is nearly universal use of the motor car. That's been nothing other than radical. Most people think that radical change is one directional. It's not. I think the real challenge, and this is broader than just walking, but because of my emphasis on walking being the starting point, so not so much just walking the mode, but it's walking scale and the walking experience, which is crucial. The strength of ideas and policy and strategy, there's not too many new ideas needed. We're pretty good at that. But the inability to translate that into practice in any reasonable times, it takes so long to get change to good design. And there's an excellent poet come cartoonist named Lunig in Melbourne, Michael Lunig. He often comments on all sorts of things, but on cities, and he wrote a little poem called The Orphalizers. And I often read that poem because it's so easy to make things awful and to design or to build badly. I don't know that you design badly, but to build badly. And it's sort of what happens when you're not looking. And to try and prevent the awfulizing and be positive enough and to be able to market it in the best sense, to sell the idea, to convince the end users, to convince the people who sometimes the pretenders for the end users, the elected reps, who some are good and some are not. That's a real challenge. So as I say there, that's a bit of a long-winded day, but to strategy, ideas, policy, pretty good. All sorts of manuals, can't ask for more. And some good examples that you know, but that ability to bridge between the two. Often that's a governance issue, but again, it's just so easy for the awfulizers to say, nah, too dear, too risky, too whatever, without really justifying. And to put up with, certainly in Australia, I think we have quite, and I would suggest in many places, quite low expectations about good design, quite low expectations about walking.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities. In this episode, you've heard from Bill Chandler. If you have any views on this interview or on any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Please follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes at talkingwalking.net. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities, our graphic artwork was designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music was composed and recorded by Simon Sanders at Easytronic.